Hello, this is the Scottish Football Show, and this is what's coming up. It's the return of Scotland's number one. Craig Gordon is back, folks. It's rigged as well. A bonny day for Bonnie Rigg, who wiped the unbeaten smirk off of Falkirk. And industry insight on transfer deadline day. Hello, dear listeners and viewers, if you're watching on YouTube. Welcome back after the winter break. I will be your beautiful guide through these stormy times. I'm Andrew Slavin. And yes, Storm Isha is battering Scotland right now, but there was nothing isha about the Scottish Cuppa this weekend. I'll stop her. Let's not forget the transfer window is in full swing. That's happening. That's quite quiet at the moment. But without further ado, joining me on this blustery Monday evening as we record this podcast, she's not in East Kilbride anymore. She's in the big smoke, smoking nothing but sweet, sweet media. It's TNT senior producer, Laura Brannan. How are you, girl?
All right, it's nice to be back. It's been a strange break. I've missed the football. I like how it's all resumed now.
The football hadn't stopped. There was still football.
I know.
Although most of it was postponed because it's fucking freezing.
It's not been the same, let's put it that way.
It's never the same. It's never the same. But someone who is never the same, he brings creative thunder from down under. Melbourne City's creative director, is it now, Finlay Marks?
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
Title change going up in the world.
I've kind of been doing two roles since I started there, but yeah. Ooh. Slightly moving up to a different role, looking after the production company side of the club, which is good. Hopefully, passing more of the videographer stuff on to, I don't want to use the word underlings, but
who uses that word anyway? Underlings. It sounds like something out of the Shire, Lord of the Rings.
I've never heard that before.
Just people that are younger, hungrier, less
younger-lings.
Tired than I am. That can go out and do stuff that don't have to put children to bed every night and can go out and live their lives filming things, which would be fun.
Oh, dear. Well, listen, as it's because it's horrible over here in the UK. Conversations tend to kind of, there's a sign when conversations are going bad when you immediately go to the weather. But I want to know what the weather's like in Australia because I am freezing my balls off over here, pal.
Do you know the weird thing about Melbourne weather is that everybody who lives in Melbourne says, oh, you get four seasons in one day. And the only place I've ever heard that said before is Glasgow or the west coast of Scotland. Because you can, like, you can have even on days where it's like 30 odd degrees out here, you can get like a thunderstorm and later in the day it can drop 10 degrees really quickly. So it's a weird one. Today's a bit muggy, actually. So probably mirroring the UK, but yeah, it's been a bit warmer recently, 30-ish.
I enjoy our weather reports right at the top of the Scottish football podcast.
It's so boring. It's like such da patter. It's not even da patter, it's your ma patter. It's only mums that talk about the weather.
How's the weather?
I haven't even said a word.
I know. Right, geez, a laugh now, you two. We've obviously been away for a few weeks. We probably have missed a few golden Scottish nuggets while we're away. So, Finn, can you tell us what we should start with?
You know, there's not a lot been going on in the transfer window. There's not even been a lot of friendlies. But one thing that did happen, which was quite funny, I thought, was Rangers on their warm weather training in La Manga in Spain played a bounce match against Hertha Berlin. And apparently the referee was very happy to be given such a high profile bounce game to do. He was just a local referee, took his very officious nature to heart and ended up selling off Philip Clement for basically complaining.
Wow.
Not constant complaining, but he just complained about a foul on Scott Wright, which he felt was a foul and not a dive, which he'd been booked for. Went over, had a quick word, and then sent him off. But the funny thing was there was nowhere for him to go because it's like a kind of gated complex with wire all around it. So there's a fantastic photo that I'm sure most people will have seen on Twitter of Philip Clement basically standing in the car park looking over because he's so tall through the wire fence just to watch the rest of the match from right outside the fence. But I did enjoy some of the memes that were going on. I think I saw one because he does kind of look a bit like Stone Cold Steve Austin, you know, like maybe preparing for a ladder match or something like that. I did enjoy all those kind of memes. But yeah, that was about, I think, as intense as it got in the off season.
I think the best one was him, was somebody said something like, when you turn up for fives too early. Very, very good.
Yeah. One moment over the weekend I really liked was in the Spartans Hearts match. There was actually a tweet after the game from Grant Stott on air. That's his Twitter handle. Grant Stott, like the legendary like Scottish presenter, like from Scotsport on STV and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And like Panto legend and stuff. Anyway, he spotted this amazing, like just perfect timing. The caption he put was, when the trackside advertising is perfectly timed. And it's Stephen Naismith giving an interview to BBC Scotland. And in the background, the advertising says hair restoration. And the poor baldy Stephen Naismith. I mean, it was just class. Absolute perfect timing. Have you ever seen that the little compilation of videos that happen in Sport TV?
Yes.
Where like there's
perfectly timed football moments or something.
Yeah.
You can search for that on YouTube. It is brilliant.
There's one where like Rafa Benitez does a little like hand swipe and a graphic appears and stuff like that. That's great fun.
Gabby Logan puts her hand out and at that exact moment there's like a bit of pyro behind her and it looks like it's coming out of her hand.
I bet you Gabby loves that.
You need to watch it. You definitely need to search for it. It's brilliant.
What else has been going on then? Laura, you got something for me?
I don't know whether to laugh or to cry over this one. So I'm not sure if this is relevant to the funny section, but did anyone see the Motherwell video over the winter break?
This is close to your heart.
Begging Taylor Swift for some dosh.
Mm.
What did you think, guys?
Sweet, sweet cheddar. I thought it was quite well done. Like, to the point of... I mean, it was certainly cheesy. But I thought it was, you know, pretty... well executed, kind of funny, but you know,
are you? I'm just wondering,
dying
Laura,
to say something.
I'm also just wondering, Laura, are you kind of a bit like Jose Mourinho pleading the fifth at this point? Are you like, I chose not to speak?
Well, I felt like I was walking on eggshells saying what I was saying to Laura.
For context, if anyone didn't see this video, and if you didn't, then count yourself lucky, because it was a pitch that they've put out to basically sell the brand of Motherwell FC to try and get an investor, pledging to the hearts of A-list celebrities in Hollywood, a bit like Wrexham style, to try and hope for a big dog to come in and invest with the club. This raises a few things for me. Firstly, it actually raises a bit of fear that the club are financially struggling when they aren't. Now remember, they are a fan-owned club. The Well Society will always, always take donations, obviously, and they should always be actively promoting that. But it first put a wee bit of fear into people going, hold on a minute, is there something quite sinister underline here, because putting it a pitch like this should be an internal attempt by any sort of brand or organisation.
Yeah.
Putting it out to the public, to Scottish football Twitter, isn't, if they are actually financially struggling, and I don't believe it is, if they are, they're not financially struggling to that extent. But if they are, it's the wrong tone to conveying this to Scottish football Twitter, because by putting it out there on social media, that is the only audience that is seeing that, is their fan base and other fans of other clubs ripping the piss out of them. So for me, it was the wrong tone to strike. Finn, you said something at the time, it was something like, it wasn't quite funny enough to be funny, but it wasn't quite serious enough to be serious.
It was just tonally, it was a bit off. I couldn't quite grasp what they were trying to do because it wasn't, yeah, it just that it wasn't quite, the script wasn't quite clever or funny enough for it to be tongue in cheek enough. It did still just have like that. I don't know. It was just, I find the whole thing off tonally. I just on a positive note, Andrew, I do agree with you. It looked brilliant. Like it looked really nice. It's obviously been done to a very high level. The sound mix is great. The edit's good. The camera movements and everything else. But even that is something I would, it kind of perplexed me because, and I know we've maybe got a bit of a vested interest in this, given your history, Laura, and like you're our pal and everything, and you've worked for Motherwell and everything. But just a matter of days before this, the club had put out a video saying, essentially, it sounded like we don't really understand why a media department's so important. And it's really expensive, which is absolute rubbish if you do it properly, which you guys did for a number of years. Then 2 days later, to release a video like this, which I don't know how much it cost, but I'm ballparking here because this is the line of work that I also work in. I would say that a video like that would cost in the region of about £10,000 to £15,000.
Yeah, I was thinking
That's
the same.
probably, realistically, about half, if not more than half, of a salary of somebody working in a video department at a Scottish club. So you can't, in one hand, say it's too expensive, we can't have these people in, and then in one video, throw half that potential salary or budget away. So I just, the whole thing baffled me.
To also say the club are financially struggling, but to then put out a video and admit that they have went in it to an external agency. Whether that is the club paying for that themselves, that raises questions of why are you wasting that money? And if it is an individual paying for that who's involved with the club, then donate that to the Well Society then instead,
Well,
because you've got two very talented people in the media team who could have made that themselves.
but how, I mean, from the outside in, okay, like how is it that damaging though? Like this video is a well-made piece of VT, and it's, I feel like it was trying to be of the viral side. It wanted to go kind of like, oh, look how funny that Scottish football can be, and they were just trying to like have a bit of fun. That was the probably the production company's brief. Make it fun, make it lighthearted, but we want to try and raise a little bit of profile for the club.
The thing is, some people responding to the criticism online were saying, ah, but it got 2.5 million views, so it was a success. One of the biggest misconceptions in media, in our line of work, is numbers equals success.
And you,
Views
this is
and
important because Laura,
engagement.
you work in the digital like kind of side of
Yeah.
things for TNT now, sorry. So you get
Yeah.
this.
Views and engagements. Yes, they have their benefits and they have their place. Obviously, you want your work to be seen and engaged with. So it's not, you don't just ignore it, but you have to take it in context and it has to be consistent as well. And I don't want to blow my own trumpet enough here, but when we were making videos for Motherwell back in the day, it was consistently high numbers and feedback and reputation that it had for being of a certain value to the club. You can take that for any company as well. I'm not just saying that about our own videos. That high numbers is great for something, but you have to look at what it's actually saying. So many of those numbers would have been shares from people going, what the fuck have I just watched? And then watching it five more times because they're laughing at it, they're screenshotting it, they're quoting it, they're sending it to their friends. So right away the numbers are skewed. For me, from the start, but also you've got to look at what they're actually saying. The whole point of the video was to accurately sum up what Motherwell is as a club and what the values are of this brand. Now, they touch on certain things, yes, but they don't touch them enough and they don't go into the really explain what this club does. They just scratch the surface of saying, ah, we do things for the community. Ah, we're a family club. I'm sorry, but every club says that. Is their brand strategy. But Motherwell actually are very good at actually putting it into practice, and this didn't really it. So it's got the numbers have to be contextualized to be classed as a success.
I think also, so just to go back to the point you were making, which I think is a valid one, where you're like, well, look, other companies or organizations do this all the time. It's not to say that outsourcing things to a third party or, you know, an agency to create content for you is necessarily bad. It's just, it needs to be, good's a really difficult word to use because that's kind of subjective, but
Justified.
it yeah, and exactly within reason. I think also it just, from reading through the script, is there not a bit in the video where they reference something like, or soccer, as you call it, or whatever? They're clearly catering this for a rich American.
Yeah, so put it out to an American audience. You can tailor your
100%.
audience. You can literally put things out on social media that is geo-blocked to certain nationalities. So Scottish football Twitter did never had to see this. Even if they did want to do it, we never had to see it.
I don't know, maybe Taylor Swift has seen it and it'll kind of pull on her heartstrings and she'll give them some dosh. Or, you know, as Will Smith in recent seasons not recorded himself saying things about Motherwell, he could certainly come across the Atlantic and slap some sense into everybody, you know?
Regrets, no, it's good laugh, isn't it? So
I didn't find it funny.
Very well, that was a laugh. Thanks, Laura.
Yeah, I kind of brought the
Little
tone
funny
down there, didn't
section.
I?
Yeah, just a wee bit. Let's keep the tone nice and low now. Let's do some news. In fact, we can start with a really, really happy news story, because the biggest comeback of all at the weekend, Craig Gordon, everyone, is back between the sticks of Heart of Midlothian. He played the full 90 minutes against Spartans, but he didn't keep a clean sheet because Spartans scored an absolute fucking beamer. To make
He
it
didn't even move
1-1.
for it.
Oh my God, he didn't even move. Yeah. But I mean, it's pretty good to see Craig Gordon back, Laura, as a number one Scotland fan that you are, of the number one.
It's great. It's really, really strong for us to have four keepers now going into the Euros. For me, it's an absolute no-brainer.
Can any of them play up front?
It's an absolute no-brainer. Craig Gordon is on the plane for me. First choice keeper.
Wow.
Yeah, oh,
Wow.
absolutely. He absolutely goes in as number one. He is the best keeper in the country. And he has done so much for us. And I don't think it's fair to just leave him out because he missed out because of injury. He didn't miss out because of form. So yeah, for me, wonderful story. The amount this boy has been through throughout his career. I say boy, I think he's actually older than
Amazing.
me. He's that old. He's older than
Yes,
me.
he's almost 40.
Yeah, he's one of the few current footballers that's actually older than me, which is really nice actually to hear. But yeah, look, the amount he's been through in his career, to see him make a comeback again, he is made of steel to fight his way back through career-wrecking injuries multiple times now. And to see him make his comeback, yeah, I think the telling thing for me will be in the league next week, to see what happens because it's very often clubs will change their goalkeeper for cup games, especially against lower opposition. So it was a no-brainer to put him in for this one, considering he did come back just before Christmas and was sitting on the bench a couple of times. But yeah, the telling sign for me now is going into the league game at the weekend.
A double leg break he came back from. But Finn, do you agree with that? Do you think Craig Gordon goes straight in to the Scotland number one jersey?
Not personally for me, because I think with a player coming back from injury, especially such a long injury layoff, and given his age, I still think if the injury hasn't happened, and regardless of age, I think I'm there with Laura. For me, between Gunn and Gordon, in terms of ability, it's there or thereabouts. I think Gordon probably is the slightly better goalkeeper all round, but he is almost 40, and Gunn's, you know, 15 years younger than that, or 10 years younger than that, whatever it is. So I think there's that. But then, well, the question I was going to ask is, is that necessarily fair as well on one of the other Scotland goalkeepers, Xander Clarke, who I think, I've never been the
Teammate
biggest fan of Xander
at Hearts
Clarke.
as well.
Exactly, but it's his position and goal, really, and Gordon has to come and displace that. But do you think that Gordon should get in on name and history alone, or in terms of fitness and form this season? And Clark, I think, shown himself to be decent this season. Is that fair for him to just get dropped straight away for Gordon coming back in? I'm not
Well, I
sure.
mean, when a player comes back, he's got 6 months now. Well, he's got the remainder of the season to get back up to match sharpness and get to completely hard reset. So that's not on me to be able to judge the medical side of things and the match sharpness side of things. It's very much the kind of sports science field, but it feels like it's very much a question now between Xander Clarke and Craig Gordon to be one of the three goalies. I feel like it would be silly to take Xander Clarke and Craig Gordon and leave someone like Liam Kelly at home when he's playing week in, week out. And you've got a boy sitting on the bench not doing anything. When you've got a decision between two players, and let's face it, the decision will probably come down to Xander Clarke or Liam Kelly, like it's always done over the previous years. When you've got one playing and one not, it seems like a no-brainer. Because for me, Craig Gordon has, if he's fit, he's there. There's certain players in that squad that are just absolute no-brainers, and he is one of them.
I totally agree with that rationale. Just thinking of what Steve Clark's like, I wouldn't be surprised if the three keepers he takes are Clark, Gordon, and Gunn.
That's exactly what's going to happen.
I think that's what he'll do.
That's terrible.
I agree with you.
I'm
totally there with you, because to me, I would rather take three goalkeepers who are hopefully all playing. So it is Kelly, Gunn, and whoever ends the season as number
whoever,
one for
Hearts. Yeah, whoever's a consistent player for Hearts,
but
of course.
I don't think that's what Clark will do. I think it will be Gordon, Clark, and Gunn will be the three goalkeepers, barring an injury to any of them. I think that's the three that he would go for.
That would be a huge message to Liam Kelly then, if he does that. And I don't mean that in a positive way. That's get out now and step up in your career, because that would be really galling if he did that.
I agree, but I just think he might do that.
I just can't get Gordon v Gunn out my head. Sounds really, really good, like a top level boxing match. It's Gordon v Gunn who's going to slap someone. Anyway, Scotland do have more good news, actually, Laura. I always point this to you because you are the number one Scotland fan. But Jurgen Klopp was saying that Andy Robertson is on the verge of his comeback. He didn't play on Sunday. For Liverpool, he wasn't even in the squad, but yeah, he's on his way.
Yeah, he's been saying for a while now it'll be the end of February. The end of January that he makes his comeback. So he had said in his press conference last week he thinks maybe in the next week or so. They've got a few midweek games as well, so they've got a few coming up. Exciting. Just to get him back fit again, obviously, get his sharpness up, and then get him up to match sharpness, wrap him up in cotton wool, don't play him for the rest of the season, and lock him away in a little...
That's the funny thing, isn't it? Because it's like, you want him to come back and play to be match sharp, but you also don't want him to fucking do it, Aaron. There's a few changes coming our way, folks, particularly when we speak about away-ins at some clubs. Rangers and Aberdeen, particularly. Rangers have came out recently and just said they've taken the decision to make changes to their away end if travelling fans don't sell out their full allocation. So Rangers have said they're going to move smaller crowds to the club deck, which is at the top of the Billstruth main stand. But Aberdeen have also pushed on with plans to reduce their away allocation as well. So they've removed the fence, which divides the away fans and the home fans. So both are looking to increase home fans at their home grounds, which is a good thing for them. What do you think, Laura?
I can see both arguments here, but when you look at the likes of Aberdeen and Hearts, for example, who both said in the summer they were going to do this, where it would be some allocations, it would be reduced. It makes sense. Sometimes you go up to Pittodrie and the away stand, you could count, like, on one hand, how many fans are actually there. So it does make sense. If they're not going to sell it out, push the barrier along a bit, the divide, fill up with home fans. Completely understand that. Hearts, I'm a wee bit more funny about, because I've not been following it over the course of the season to be seeing how it's going. But for example, I remember when Motherwell went there, they put the tarpaulin over the seats and just reduced it for the sake of reducing it. And not actually filling it up with Hearts fans. So I don't like that argument side of things. The Rangers one, I think, is strange. Now, I don't want to go into the whole Old Firm Derby allocation, which is a whole different debate. But when it comes to the other...
Old Firm Stead, mate! The old fund doesn't exist.
But when the other 10 clubs come to visit, they've obviously got their allocation in the corner, which I think is about 800 tickets, to potentially move them. And I'm not sure if this is a trial basis for permanently moving them, or it's just a trial basis for the same idea of where they don't sell out the allocations. For example, a smaller set of supporters like Livingston come to town and they won't fill the 800. My reservations with that is very much from my job perspective, working in football. A big part of selling the game is to show the, when it's an away team, their interaction with the away ground. They are there to cause an upset, regardless of who the team is. If you're the away team, they want to interact with their fans. If they score a goal, especially at Ibrox, I've been there filming at Ibrox before. Motherwell scored. The players run to the fans. You get great fan shots. You get that interaction with them, whether it is when a goal scored or at full time, they go over and clap them. You lose a massive aspect of that if fans are hidden away in the upper tier and tucked away. I completely understand Rangers' perspective here. They want to increase the atmosphere from a home perspective. They want to give their fans first pick, best pick, sorry. So I get that. But for me, it sets a kind of dangerous precedent here, where if you just have the freedom to reduce your allocations and move your fans around for the benefit of the home fans, eventually they'll start selling those tickets as season tickets to fans and not just on a one-off basis. And for me, it's just if we had the minimum allocation rule that you have in UEFA and international games, which is 5% for away fans, I feel like you would avoid this. But with more clubs doing this now, it feels like we're going down a slightly dangerous road where away fans are going to suffer.
Finn, what do you think? I mean, obviously you're a Rangers fan, Finn, so you'll be biased about it all.
Well, I think the most important thing in all of this, like what we always try and do, is see things from as wide a perspective as possible. And because we know fans are the lifeblood, it's like what's best for the fans. So just situation I know most about being a Rangers fan is the one at Ibrox. So at the moment, it's literally just a trial. It's a one-off trial for the Livingston game that's coming up. Livingston traditionally don't bring much of an away support to Ibrox. We're literally talking about 50 people, sometimes 50 or 60 fans coming, which in the part of the stadium that they get allocated, it's not just about the seats that they're given. It's also the way that they have to segment and just strip away seats at the side of it, either side of it. So we're talking, it's going close to 1,000, I think it is, most times for most matches. So every single away end that comes to Ibrox, regardless of the size of club, gets around about 800 or so. Is it 750, 800 tickets, around about that? There's a couple of hundred that they have to partition off at the side as well. If you've got 50 fans, it just seems completely pointless, because you're just not selling seats for the sake of not selling it. So if it is a fan base, and let's be honest as well, like Rangers Livy, it's hardly a fixture that has a huge amount of beef around it. Or if it's Rangers St Johnstone, like there's not going to be aggro in the stands. They can mix in the main stand between that and the club deck. It's all very sedate. Like it's not going to be an issue. But if in a club side, you can sell an extra couple of hundred, if not 1,000, seats to your own supporters. And also, it's worth mentioning, Rangers have a waiting list for season ticket sales at the moment, roughly about 10,000 strong. So there are the demand far outstrips the supply they can give for most league games as well. I think anything that kind of looks to increasing match day atmosphere for home and away supporters is a good thing. You know, Rangers are also trialling moving the Union Bears from the Broomloan stand over to the Copeland on the other side, and giving them a more central space. So I'm all for people trying things. If it doesn't work, that's fine, then bring it back. But the fans are asking for it. It was recently polled, and I think it was like 91% that were happy with the Union Bears relocating in the stadium. I can't see what the issue is with that. My problem with, say, doing like a blanket 5% thing, Laura, which maybe there's an argument, I think, more for a sliding scale of it. You know how when people sell tickets in clubs, you get category A matches, category B matches, category C, whatever. And that will determine maybe what the costing is for a ticket. I think you can maybe do that in terms of supports, away supports coming. I don't think you can blanket give, say, 5 5% of a stadium, because again, for argument's sake, Ibrox we're talking about here, 5% of the stadium's capacity is 2,500 seats. When you've got a team like Livingston, whose average home crowd is 1,800, you can't possibly be manufacturing an extra 1,000 fans out of thin air.
No, but they won't. They won't come. Away so that's an example of a time when you go, we're not going to fill that allocation here. Have back 4% of the 5. You'd have to take into consideration logistics of grounds. Some grounds, it makes sense to just allocate one stand to away fans, or the way certain stands are built and the stewarding and everything like that. So it's very much a pie in the sky thing, but it's an example. It could be 3%, it could be 1%, it can be whatever, but I feel like a minimum number protects this from happening, protects from what we see in Old Firm games as well, which is just a nonsense right now. It's you've got to protect the spectacle of the sport. And that is kind of what I'm against. Look, for example, Motherwell, they do this. I know other clubs do it as well, but they sometimes move the fans from the away stand and put them into the main stand when it's a smaller section, like Livingston, like Ross County. I'm not against moving them if it makes more sense logistically, but it's they've moved them to the same level. It's still one-tier ground, one-tier stand. It's when you move them to up the very back of the ground, you're not giving them the chance to even create an atmosphere.
I know where Laura's coming from, and I'm actually 100% with her, because if you think about it, I look back on times where I've cut promos for Scottish football, and the amount of times that you're maybe cutting up like nice tight ISO angles and there's empty seats behind footballers celebrating and stuff like that. If you had, say, for just a hypothetical suggestion here, because Laura mentioned a second ago, like, so in that scenario of Livingston not having, not being able to take up the full 5%, well, who organises that? Who runs that? Who looks after that? Is it the club? Or are we trying to say that the SFA should take more, or SPFL should take more of an action in running clubs and saying, like, it has to be a blanket 5%, but we can negotiate for any games that you want as well, or whatever?
First of all, please don't give the SFA or the SPFL responsibility.
Well, the thing is, they can't, because they don't have anyone there to actually do it. The clubs run the SPFL.
There can be a danger inherent in these arbitrary numbers, which for maybe some clubs works really well, but doesn't for others. So I know you're saying, like, oh, make it 3%, make it 1%. It's still, I think, trying to come up with a one-size-fits-all arbitrary, this is what every team should do, I don't think works in Scottish football, because there is such a graduation between club sizes, stadium infrastructure, the way that the away fans sit in there, the way that they do things. You can't have that. I think it needs to be almost on an ad hoc basis of doing these things. And you look back to when the SPFL or the Scottish Leagues have introduced arbitrary things. Straight away, I'm thinking of every ground needs to be a 10,000 seater stadium. It killed three clubs. Do you know what I mean? Like, it doesn't work for us. We're not a country where our football infrastructure allows us to just be like, right, this rule seems to be fair, so we'll just apply it, and it's a sliding scale. It's like, it doesn't work that way. So I think, regardless of the club, whether it's one of Rangers or Celtic, or whether it's Aberdeen, or whether it's Falkirk, or whomever it is, you have to be making decisions that I think service your fan base, your home supporters, best first and foremost. You have to be making decisions that make the match day and the televised experience look as good as possible. Mm-hmm. And you want to be in all of these things, doing it with as least upheaval as possible. And if that means that for certain games of the season that there'll be fans sitting in a different part of a stadium, then so be it. I just think I can't see what the massive issue is, and I don't see that there being a massive inherent danger in precedent for certain clubs trying to change the way that they have a match day experience for their own supporters.
Yeah, that's fair. We should rattle through the rest of the news. The only other point I was going to make was that Callum Davidson is back in Scottish football. He was appointed the Queen's Park manager, won his first game in charge, a 2-1 win over Raith Rovers.
Which is some result. It's some result, by the way.
It's an incredible result. It wasn't the weekend, because Raith Rovers were in the Scottish Cup. But it was quite nice because James McPake, who we've had on the podcast as well, he came out and said that it's nice to see good people back in Scottish football again. I know Callum Davidson is still loved at St Johnstone, but a lot of St Johnstone fans were happy to see him go at the time. Obviously, a double winner, League Cup, Scottish Cup in the same time. Won more cups in Scotland than even Steven Gerrard, which some people need reminded of. So yeah, good to see him back in Scottish football. Hopefully get to see him in the Premiership soon. That'd be nice, as well as Queen's Park. But look, it's the transfer window. Yay, it's exciting. Get your yellow ties on or whatever. But it's not been that exciting, really, has it, at all? There's a few things knocking around. One thing I really enjoyed was on the 19th of January, just a couple of days ago, Livingston tweeted happy birthday to Joe Nubley for, I think it's 27th, 28th birthday, maybe. Happy birthday on the 19th, the Friday. And then on the 20th, on game day, he's not in the squad. And everyone goes like, oh, he might be rumoured to be going elsewhere. He's only got 2 goals for the season. It was his birthday the night before. He's hungover. he's not turned up. I'm not saying that's true. This is just a joke. It's just a joke. Or is it? but yeah, apparently he could be off to Exeter City. I really like Joel Nubley. I think he's a good player. And shown flashes of how good he could be. But that's all it's ever been. It's just flashes of it. You know, he went to Arbroath like 2 seasons ago, did pretty well at the start of the season. Livingston brought him back and he looked really good again. But bit of a journeyman. I hope he can get a move or stay and do better, because Livingston could really do with better right now.
Could really do with some goals.
Yeah. Andy Halliday has gone to Motherwell Laura. He's left Hearts. And a good bit of experience, because Motherwell could be really, you know, the worry of being in a relegation battle is there again.
Yeah, I was actually surprised by this, because I feel like Andy Halliday is such a journeyman now. I couldn't believe he was only 32.
He's a decent player, though.
I thought he was like near the end. I was like, oh, quite surprised by it. But no, it's actually a good one. He comes in at the point where Callum Slattery has been ruled out for the rest of the season through injury. So to get a really kind of meaty midfielder in there.
That's a great phrase for a midfielder. He's not even fat, but I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah, they need someone bossing that area with Slats out. So yeah, I think it's came at the right time to fill that void. Good move from a wee bit unfortunate. They lost Mika Beerith. He returned to Arsenal from his loan spell, which I think, I don't know about you guys, right? That he signed in a year long loan spell at Motherwell. He got recalled. Fine, that happens. But then he gets sent out to Stumgratz for a second loan spell. I find that a little bit cheeky, because it's almost like just going, actually, we watched him, we don't rate your level, and we want to test him higher. It jars a little for me, but maybe just more so because I think he's going to be a loss to Motherwell. So I think they are maybe going to panic now in the striker kind of department, coming to the latter stages of the window.
I'd say don't get too personal about it. Clubs do that. I think clubs do that more often than you think.
Yeah.
You know, they take players, particularly players who aren't playing. I know Beerith was playing and he was injured for a little bit. And he does look like a decent operator. And it is a loss to Motherwell. But, I mean, even this lad that's gone to Hearts, Dexter Lembekisa, left back, I think. He was at a championship club, lower down. But he got pulled back from Wolves because they wanted him to play at a higher level, and he's gone to Hearts. So that's a, you know, there you go. Wolves think we're a good level.
Just not Arsenal.
Yeah. But I think Hearts, Motherwell and Hearts were interested in Scott Fraser. But maybe that's on the back burner now that Halliday's gone to Motherwell. And maybe Fraser's more likely to go to Hearts. Hearts apparently want to bring him back to Scotland. Obviously, he was at Dundee United at the start of his career, but he's at Charlton now. Good little midfielder. I think Stephen Naismith just wants to bolster all of that kind of side of things. But do you enjoy these fun rumours? I mean, the rumours are going to go flat. It's going to heat up, I think.
You're talking about Newbley missing the game. Shanklin missed Hearts game at the weekend through illness. And right away, it's, is he going to Rangers? What's the deal there? It's just, this has been constant now for the last week. To be fair, I think Shanklin going to Rangers would be a great move for him, but not such a great move in the Hearts perspective, but for the individual, yes. Majovski feels like it's been dragging on for weeks now. Is he going to Celtic? Is he going elsewhere? It's, I don't know, like working in football in where I wasn't at a club, loved deadline day for its drama. That's the build-up part. It's like the opposite of Christmas. Christmas, I love the build-up and don't really care so much for the actual day itself, whereas with transfer window, it's the other way around. Hate the build-up, just want the actual day itself.
Here's a question for you, Laura. Working in club football, club media, sorry, particularly at Celtic, how long would you know a player had signed before it was announced to the world?
Do you know what's actually a bit different from my time at Celtic? And this is going to make me sound really old, but we didn't really have social media. Well, we did. We did have social media. I'm not that old. But we didn't go as big on it. It's not like these days where you make signing videos and everything. So the turnaround was a lot quicker at Celtic to when you get a player in to when you announce them. Whereas at Motherwell, even at West Ham as well, the time it takes, the comms team have to take into consideration the media department at that stage and go, wait, how fast can you turn things around?
That's good.
I mean, you get a heads up. Sometimes you get a heads up saying there's a boy coming in 5 minutes, or there's a boy coming, he's making a bit of a journey, he'll be here in 3 hours, and you start to go, right, okay, we start putting our ideas together. So it really depends on the player, the individual of the situation. Sometimes you get told at 7 o'clock at night, nah guys, just go home, nothing's happening, but be on call just in case. There's other times you go, absolutely nothing's happening, put your phone off, you will not be on call. And then there's other times where, which the worst one for me was when it was James Scott left Motherwell on deadline day 1 year, and we weren't expecting it, and right away it's,
did go to Hull?
Yeah, and it was, let's do a highlights video of his time at Motherwell, and you're like, okay, I need to then turn around a highlights video before you announce it. And that's when the real pressure is on at that point.
That seems a little bit nicer than most marketing departments in either, well, everything really. Finn, you'll know this. Marketing just go like, I've had this great idea. I want like Marvel-esque release video. And can I have it tomorrow at 9 a.m, please?
I once had a client approach me about doing a signing video. And their idea was, they were like, you know, the Netflix home screen, can we like build a home screen that it comes out and then there's like multiple programs and then we select the one that's this player and it's this highlights reel. And I was like, I mean, I can give it a go. And what's your budget and turnaround? And they're like, oh, the budget's 1 day. So could you do it in 24 hours? I was like, absolutely not. Like that's at least a week to try and build that or something. But yeah, no, you do get it. I have obviously now started to experience this working in, for a football club myself, Laura. So a lot of the time is quite good because we actually get a heads up that a deal might be happening. Geographically, it takes slightly longer to get to Melbourne than it probably does from, you know, London to Motherwell or something like that. So we usually get a couple of days heads up that something's happening. And it gives us a bit of time to prep things and go through an archive and try and pull things together. But yeah, it's nice when the window's shut. It's like, it's not just once, you know, once they always say the window slams shut at like 1 a.m. on the 1st of February, whatever it is, that's a really nice place to be when you work in club media, because you know, nothing else is going to change for the next little while. But yeah. It's been a quiet window, though. I mean, not just in terms of Scottish football, but like, there's hardly been anything going on. I mean, there's not been a huge amount of things coming in. There's been one or two that have caught my eye, just very not hardly movers and shakers at an international level. But I was quite excited to see that Greg Stewart, after his time in India, has re-signed for third time for Killy, second or third time. On a free, that he's come to the end of his time there. He's done 2 years there. He's been pretty much the player of the league the 2 years that he's been there, I think he's won a championship title as well. So he's leaving Mumbai City, who are also, interestingly, part of the City Football
what did
Group.
What's you say? What's the award
yeah,
called?
Yeah, it's called Hero of the Year.
Love that.
Which
Love
is
that.
So good. I need to just double check that if it's definitely Hero, but it's definitely Hero. Let me just look. I'm
Hero. You are now a hero.
Yes.
That's it.
Indian Super League Hero of the League.
Hero of the League. Oh my gosh. Can we just start a petition now that that's the only way we address Greg Stewart whenever we mention him going forward now? It's
yes.
Greg Stewart,
hero of
the league.
He's the motherfucking hero of the league. Yes.
Exactly. That boy a cape.
Yeah, yeah, okay. It's so good. Well, it's like the whole man of the match kind of thing is gone now, isn't it? It's always person of the match.
Player of the match is only gone to tick a box, shall we say.
Is that the sound of a can of worms opening there? Oh,
I'm allowed to say that, okay? Because it's the women that are offended, so I'm allowed to say that.
Interesting. Oh, wow.
I actually
picked a box there. Better shut off Twitter for a few hours when this podcast goes out.
One of the few things that I wouldn't mind seeing the acronym change to MVP. I always thought that sounded cooler anyway.
Yeah, I totally agree.
NFL's MVP, like MVP, man. And then it's not box ticking, it's just what it's called, and it's cooler sounding. So let's just use that.
And then everyone who's had over like five player of the matches or five MVPs or 10 MVPs, right?
Yeah.
Then like get all the MVPs of the season to play against each other. Have like a super match at the end of the season.
Can we call it the HOTL? The HOTL Super Match, Heroes of the League Super Match. I think that's what it needs to be.
It would be just in Scottish football. That's how you make a fucking video to sell Scottish football. You get spend 15 grand on the Hero of the League MVP Game of the Year.
You've been watching too much Gladiators, Andrew.
Do you know what? I haven't actually watched any of it. I've heard it's really, really good.
A bad night last night, you're having a f***ing horrendous one now.
We should really talk about the actual football that happened at the weekend. Everyone's definitely stopped listening right now, but the Scottish Cup happened. That is still a pretty big thing. It's the best day of the football calendar, let's face it. Fourth round it was. So some huge results really that came out. We'll come to the draw in a little while. But the one thing that I really, really, really loved was Bonnie Rigg-Rose ending Falkirk's unbeaten season. Falkirk haven't lost in 26 matches. It's amazing. Bonnie Rigg had only won 7 games all season going into this, and they won 2-1. It was pretty much a last-minute winner as well. Absolutely superb.
The magic of the cup. It's just, this is why we've said it so many times as well before, Laura, like it's specifically this bit, you know, it's like post-Christmas, the fourth round of Scottish Cup, and you're starting to get the big boys coming in and stuff. Last year, we had the Darvel Aberdeen game. I think it was the year before Hearts against Brora Rangers, maybe, or the year before that again. But you always get some sort of upset going, and it's maybe not the biggest one of all time, given that Falkirk are only one league above. But yeah, Falkirk have been incredible this season. And
it's the fact that they haven't lost since July. And that was the League Cup game against Dundee United, which is the only defeat of the season. So I were they not like the most informed team in the UK?
I think that was Stenny. I think that was Stenny.
Is that what I'm thinking of? Right,
well done, 15 matches straight, yeah.
That's what I'm thinking of then. But, I mean, it's still clearly a good run. It's still clearly very impressive. So, yeah, to do that and to do it in the last minute as well just adds that absolute cup drama that we were all... I think we all actually for a point thought Spartans were going to be the cup story.
Oh, what a goal.
What a goal, by the way. So equalising against Hearts. I mean, goal of the round. Like, incredible.
Oh, possibly.
Goal of the whole tournament, yeah.
Maybe, I don't know.
It's a beautiful strike. But it wasn't until a very late Hearts winner that was, it kind of seemed quite routine for them to just kind of wrap it up at the end. But it was a squeaky bum time for them.
Partick Thistle battered Ross County 3-0, which is one of those, like, you know, you look back at the relegation playoff or the promotion playoff, however you want to put it. That's a bit of a retribution, shall we say?
Yeah, I don't. Do you think this makes up for it? I don't know if it makes up for it, but
oh, you'd swap it, you know.
Yeah, you'd swap it, but it would have felt sweet. I think the fact that you hammer them, and it wasn't just a 1-0 or a 2-1 or whatever. The fact that they put three past them, they're gonna have enjoyed that.
I think I saw in the build up to the game, there were quite a lot of Thistle fans on Twitter that were just like, I actually have PTSD. I feel physically sick just seeing the Ross County logo for like how much of a disaster that was the last time they went up there.
Just the whole journey up there must have been giving them awful rough flashbacks. Yeah. Awful. Fair play to everyone that went up.
Because I remember we had Jordan White on the show, didn't we? The Ross County striker talking about that game. Mad when you look back. But
that was incredible.
Really mad.
That whole, I don't remember a game where I've absolutely like shouted at the TV that much about a game where I don't support either of the teams, because it was when I was in Prague with West Ham for the Conference League final, and getting ready to leave the hotel, and I was like texting my team going, give me an extra half an hour, because it went to extra time at that point. And I was like, no, I need to stay there. I
think biggest game in West Ham's history, and you're more interested. Yes. Mad how Derek Adams' post-match comments as well was wild, right?
This boy is not enjoying his new job. I don't think anyone can deny that. He's basically said it in so many words. And like, yeah, okay, we take on jobs that we don't always like sometimes. Fair play happens to the best of us. But he has came out now in a few times to just basically talk about how unhappy he is, and how it's not the job he thought he was taking on. It's not the group of players that he was hoping to have.
It's career suicide, this, though, isn't it? The way he's being.
It's not great.
He's completely, like, destroying any credibility that he had within Scottish football. Like, I remember when he first, you know, started at Ross County, like, promotion after promotion, and okay, fair enough, like, moved down south. Then he came back as, like, an assistant manager at Hibs and stuff like that, and you were like, well, he was a manager in his own right down in England and doing well at Plymouth Argyle and whatnot. That was strange. But then went back down. He's got a good reputation in England. So for him to come back and just be a fucking moaning pain in the arse, I'd love to get him on the podcast and actually be like, come on, Derek, what's going on? If he's as honest as he is in front of, like, a BBC Scotland interview, I think he would come on the podcast and be pretty honest with us as well.
He might be more honest once he's maybe left Dingwall. But the way things are going, that might be sooner rather than later. I'm not entirely sure. The other result that really stood out to me was Airdrie beating St Johnson. Of course, it's a shock because of the divisions, but Airdrie have been, they've almost kind of like gone under the radar for the last season or so as well, because the way that they came up in the playoffs at the end of last season, and I was expecting them, you know, maybe to be towards the wrong end of the table in the championship. Mm-hmm. They've been good, and they were totally full value for beating St Johnson, who themselves have had a bit of an upturn since Levine's come in. So I was quite surprised by that result, I've got to be honest. But fair play to AJ for getting it.
We should also say Bucky Thistle had a great day at Celtic Park, despite getting absolutely thumped 5-0.
Still a great day then. They lost.
But it's one of those. It's like, what, the Highland Hoops against
the
Glasgow.
No, I'm sorry. That's tourist stuff. No,
a bunch of
win a game.
Plumbers, marketing executives and teachers and whatnot.
It's a cup game.
Nah,
they're not there just to
never
be tourists.
You can never expect them. No, you cannot. You can totally expect them to enjoy that, playing at that level, to just understand that level.
That
would have been amazing.
Day out.
Oh,
come on.
Oh, it would have been a great day out playing at Celtic Park.
Aye, shipping 5 goals. No, I'm not having that.
I played 11 sides at Wembley, and it wasn't a competitive match, but it was still amazing.
You didn't play in the FA Cup, though. This is the Scottish Cup. Give it a bit of respect.
Fine.
No.
Calm down. Calm yourself down. Let's talk about the draw. But I'll just rattle through them, and then you just pick out your favourites, okay? So Kilmarnock are going to play either Brora Rangers or Cove Rangers. It's mad that the Rangers are playing the Rangers. Inverness Caledonian Thistle against Hibs. Aberdeen versus Bonnyrigg Rose. Tasty. Greenock Morton against Motherwell. Airdrie Unions against Heart of Midlothian. Giving the full licks this time. The Rangers versus Ayr United. Partick Thistle v Livingston. And St Mirren versus Celtic. Go on, Finn. You pick out your favourites first.
Thistle versus Livingston will be interesting. I think especially because it's going to be up for a hill. I think Thistle could go through in that tie. I'm always just intrigued by the kind of the championship, premiership game. So I think Hibs having to go to Cali Thistle will be interesting. And Hearts having to go to Airdrie as well, having disposed of St Johnstone in the last round. I am quite interested seeing Bonnyrigg go up to Aberdeen as well. Mm-hmm. So yeah, there's a couple of interesting ties there, I think, and it's good to see a couple of teams from the lower division still in the competition at this point as well. So yeah, hopefully they have a good day out, Laura. I hope they enjoy their time.
The big one for me though is Airdrie against Hearts. I think that is going to be a great game because Airdrie are well within their rights to think they can do some damage here.
Yeah, why not?
So yeah, really hope that one's televised. Yeah, really, really looking forward to that one.
That's it. Episode's over. Thank you, Finn. Thank you, Laura. If you are still listening right now, that is amazing. Thanks so much. You should go and follow us on Twitter if you don't already. Find us on LinkedIn or whatever. Why not? It's a laugh, right? And leave us a review because that actually does a really good thing for us. That'd be really cool. And if you want to get involved in the show, just drop us a message. Why the hell not? Someone will respond, probably. But until then, go and listen to something else. Goodbye.